Good afternoon, Steeler Nation. This is Rudy, Rude Dog Reyes on the RudeDogShow.com. You know, we head into the season opener. Yes, I know, it's against the Patriots. Lots of questions, lots of things raging on, obviously behind the scenes. We're going to focus on sports, even though the Patriots seem to be plastering every news and sports outlet throughout the world right now. This is expected to be a game that's going to set the tone for the 2015 NFL regular season. However, the Steelers are missing one key component, and Marquise Pouncey may not be back until Week 9 against Oakland. But we know about good centers. We know about great centers. One of those great centers is Chucky Okobie. Welcome to the show, Chucky. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time and speaking to me this afternoon, sharing your memories from draft day, obviously the Steelers, and the NFL as a whole. So let's jump right into this, okay?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much. 2001 NFL draft, playing for a powerhouse such as Purdue, those two just worked together. You were you played with another NFL Super Bowl eventual MVP, Drew Brees, who now plays for the New Orleans Saints. Obviously, same year drafted, but you set the tone early, but not under center. You established yourself as a 1998 All Big Ten second team and starting center for the 2010 Big Ten championship team out of Purdue, including the 2001 Hula Bowl, which separated you from the rest of the pack early, which had scouts essentially looking for you and towards you, maybe even looking at you prior to even entering Purdue in high school out of New York. So first things first, your first middle name is actually Chukwun Wheezy Sunume. It would seem that some people had some issues pronouncing your name. Did you change it, or you just acquired the nickname? How'd that happen?
I mean, no kid picks their own name. I mean, the parents are going to shorten their name. You know, make something easy for the teachers to understand on the first day of school. So, you know, it makes it easier, a lot less explaining when introducing yourself. You know,
definitely. You know, it's something people have never heard before. So for them to, you know, essentially pronounce your full name, it's just easier to say Chucky and be done with it. Was football your first choice? I ask you this because you lettered in baseball not once but twice, not to mention track and field. Was there something about the performance that you attained during baseball and track and field that you believed, based on the workout methods that you had acquired, that made you a surefire football player as an All-American during high school?
I mean, to me, my favorite sports growing up always been baseball and soccer as a fan, from a fan standpoint. And, you know, baseball, you know, being a Pirates fan is what I've always been. And I was a Pirates fan before it was cool to be one. And so baseball is always my first choice in terms of playing sports. I never played football until I got to high school. And it was pretty much like child's play. That's the way it felt. You know, I'd never played the sport. Hell, I didn't even know the rules. I was a Steeler fan, just being from Pittsburgh. And so, you know, obviously I'm going to gravitate towards football when the opportunity arose. And the rest is history.
You're right. Now, when you look at film during your tenure at Purdue, it seemed that you embodied the offensive positioning, not only as a right guard, but as center. Of course, you moved over from right guard to the center position. Were the only positions that you played while at Purdue was center and right guard?
I mean, I played right guard. I played guard for 4 years. I redshirted in 96. Then I started right guard in 97 through 99. We had a really, really good center the first 3 years that I started. The kid, Jim Niedrak, he did a really good job for us. He graduated. And of the players we had left, I was, I guess, best suited for the position. And not only that, you know, being only 6'1", looking forward to potential career as a professional, it was something that I thought was important to have film of me playing that position, as opposed to scouts just having to envision it, because obviously at the NFL level, that's what the position I would have to play. And, you know, it was just change at first. Right guard is what I did, you know, for a long time, but in the end, I got to give it to, you know, Danny Hope and Coach Tiller, my coaches at Purdue, and they saw the future, and I ended up being drafted.
You know, looking at that, Purdue line, you know, you had a lot of eventual, I mean, you had five other future players, including Matt Light, obviously, that you had played with. You were playing with Drew Brees, as we mentioned earlier. Have you ever thought about moving to the other side of the ball? At any point, did defense seem like an option for you?
Nah, defense was never my thing. In high school, I saw defense as too much chasing and running after people and not knowing where you were going to be running. It was not, being as someone who didn't grow up playing football, it just wasn't very appealing to me. I tend to be more of a thinker, so offense is a better place for me. At Purdue, defensively, we had so many great players on our defense. You know, when I look back at guys that I played with, like Roosevelt Colvin, and Chike O'Keefer, Aiken Adell, Sean Phillips, and Matt Mitrione, who's in the UFC now, we had a lot of great defensive players, so there was really no room for me to play defense at Purdue.
Well, you definitely had the speed, though. I mean, you were track and field, you were sharp, you were fast. Even at 6'1", I mean, I could see you as maybe even a DB. But if you don't want to chase people, definitely not the side of the ball that you want to be on. Moving forward, in 1999, you had a season-ending dual tricep injury. Never a good thing. Brett Kiesel had one of those last year, and you were expected to miss the entire season. However, season-ending injuries can be disheartening and psychologically challenging when your focus is set on the sidelines during any given game. What was your mindset heading into those sideline games?
You're breaking up a little bit.
That's okay. No, that's perfectly okay. What was your mindset when you headed into those sideline games after your injury to your tricep?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. As a football player, I just look at it as going under the knife. As you're getting fixed, something's not right, and you're getting it right. And one thing about injuries in general is, you know, a lot of times when, you know, people will have torn ACLs or torn Achilles tendons, and these are pretty serious injuries. With the level of medical care we have in this country, and then you take it up even about four more notches when you're talking about professional sports. A lot of times when you come back from injury, you're in better shape than you were to begin with. But football is a violent game. So, you know, most people who have a torn ACL, maybe they tore it, you know, playing soccer or playing tennis or whatever people might do actively, they don't go back out there and start throwing their body into people. So a lot of the stuff is just, it's between the ears when you have injuries. It's not necessarily about the integrity of the work the doctor did to fix it, because I'm pretty sure that, you know, when I go into games after I've been injured, I know it's fixed. It's just in my head knowing that those type of injuries are possible. And that can sometimes affect people coming back to football after an injury.
Right, exactly. And I'm going to touch on the Pirates thing for half a minute. Mark Melancon went in last night after not playing for 10 days because there was such a deep bullpen now, which, by the way, yes, I am a Pirates fan, so go Bucks. Looking at his performance yesterday, it was an easy in, easy out for him. He recognized that he didn't have the same velocity, that there was something rusty about his play. And essentially, he took himself out of the game. So, you know what? I know better. I've been doing this a long time. Somebody else take my place, take my position. Of course, they had put in Caminero. Tell me what it was about the last six games in that 1999 season where you came back. Was there anything special for you during those last six games that helped motivate you into the following season?
Well, I mean, into the following season, I don't know. I mean, to me, it was important knowing that I had a personal goal of trying to play football at the next level. Having some understanding of the scouting process, it was really important for me to play my best in my junior year, going before my senior year started. I mean, obviously, playing my senior year still is very important, but to me, you know, you can't make the club in the tub if you're trying to do something with athletics, you got to be out there on the field or the ice or the pitch or diamond, depending on your sport.
Right.
And that's the way I looked at it is like if you want to be a football player, then you're gonna have to find a way to be out there playing football.
Most definitely, and with any sport, you have to mentally be able to desensitize yourself and say, you know what, maybe I just need to, like, cool my jets, not get so antsy, you know, lower the anxiety level, understand that I am injured and that I will come back. It's almost as if every single game is I'm getting better, I'm becoming more acclimated, I'm gaining more motion, my strength is coming back. So definitely, you know, hats off to you to be able to come back for the last six games. And ultimately, you were the center that Drew Brees took from and five other NFL players that we had discussed earlier. What do you believe attributed to your line? I mean, it was stout. It was solid. What was it about that line that just made that year very special for you at your last year in Purdue?
I think, you know, when we look back at the Joe Tiller era at Purdue, that's really the most successful coach other than Jack Mollenkopf back in the 60s that Purdue's ever seen. The thing about it is, it wasn't just about athletic ability. When I look at the players that we had on offense, look even some of the guys who are still playing now or just recently stopped playing, we weren't necessarily the best talent in America. I can remember playing against some teams, and you know they'd have guys that weren't even starting that were being drafted in the first round the following year. The thing about our team was the mentality and the character of the individuals. I think you look at a guy like Drew Brees, and I've known him since he was at Austin Westlake and before he even came to Purdue. And the thing about him is he's so competitive in every aspect of life. It doesn't matter what he's doing, whether it's football or academics, he had the highest GPA on our team, and that was something that he worked very hard to do. He just always had to be the best at whatever he was doing. And when you have somebody like that leading your offense, leading your team, then it's hard not to catch on to that way. You have guys like Matt Light, who is very... he's a very proud individual. And with him, it's not necessarily about being in first. It's about making sure that he's done everything he can do to tap every last ounce of potential out of himself. And so, you know, I look at myself personally, and I've always been one to compete against myself and just try to see if I can be the best me that I could be, whether it be on a football field, whether that be in business, whether that be as a friend, as a son, whatever. Mm-hmm. And when you have the right combinations of people with the right coach at the right time, I think we had really a perfect storm there at Purdue with that group. And on our offensive line, of the four of us that were seniors when we came in 96, I was the only offensive lineman. The other ones were converted players from different positions. And I think that probably added an additional athletic element for the group that, you know, we were probably a little bit better on our feet, a little bit faster than, you know, with Light having been a tight end, and Brandon Gorham was a defensive end, and Ian Allen was a defensive tackle. So these guys are typically at those positions are going to be a little bit more athletic than offensive linemen. And that gave us an edge, mm-hmm. especially in some one-on-one matchups.
You know, it says a lot to not only be able to be cerebral, but to take your cerebral nature and apply that to the physical nature, you know, to have a balance between both. A natural leader isn't someone who necessarily is a football player, but I'll tell you that it's a positive reinforcement to know that you have somebody out on the field that's reflecting your interest to be the best that you can be, to do the best that you can do. Do you believe you left it out at Purdue while you were there?
Say that one more time.
I said, do you believe that you left all your talent on the field while you were at Purdue for the time that you were there?
I mean, I think in hindsight, there's always things I wish I could have done different, things I could have done better. There's accolades that I wish I would have received that, you know, maybe my performance wasn't good enough, but that's because I aim very high. you know, a person that's always aiming for the top spot. And I think that I did everything I could. I think, you know, I dug deep inside myself and risked, sacrificed my body and my mind and everything I could for my teammates and for my coaches and for my family, who I had to represent every single person out there on the field and on television.
Right.
In the end, you know, maybe some people on our team, you know, caught that bug too. And we ended up putting together a really magical campaign in 2000, winning a Big Ten championship.
Right. It's always nice to know that you did everything you could, when you could do it, and how you were able to get it done with the talent around you. And there was a lot of talent around you at the 2001 NFL draft as well. I know that much, including Drew Brees. Knowing that you left it out whilst at Purdue, the next stage of your career you were sending towards, you were able to be picked, and just sitting out brought on certain anxieties. You know, obviously you amongst Ben Roethlisberger, who waited exponentially long to be called. What was running through your mind as you waited to be called?
As far as going into the draft and waiting to be picked, I would imagine that it's like childbirth. You know, this baby's coming, you just don't know when. And so it was kind of like that, not knowing, you know, knowing that you're not going to be a first round draft pick makes it easy at that point. But once you start to get to that range, when you know you're supposed to go somewhere between 3 and 5, then after that, every pick starts to mess with you a little bit, and you wonder if maybe you could have done something different. Maybe, you know, why did they pick that guy, not me? And there's a million reasons why each club does what they do. It's not personal, but that's not the way you feel about it, you know, at age 22. So, you know, for me, getting called by Pittsburgh was a bonus. It was, you know, not necessarily, I wasn't waiting for Pittsburgh, but I just was so glad to be in the National Football League. You know, I think that was more of the excitement, just being a part of this show.
Lots of Division II, Division III players are very thankful for their ability to be in the NFL, and there's so many of them, and still fighting, you know, to get onto rosters of teams that haven't quite cut them yet. Looking at your time with the Steelers, you know, obviously they like to pick their down-home teams. They like to pick the guys that are close to home, the Ohio natives, you know, the Pittsburgh natives. They, you know, they acquired Jesse James out of, you know, Pitt. So they really like to pick close to home. Doesn't always happen. I mean, they reached in the CFL, picked, you know, Sean Lemon and Ian Wild. Obviously, they've both been cut since then, but spent their time at Steelers training camp. Sean Lemon went on to play linebacker for the 49ers. Apparently, he's starting because of the 11 starters are missing on that line. In 2004,
you're breaking up a lot right now.
All right, I apologize about that. I typically don't have this kind of issue, so I'll see about making some adjustments while we talk, if that makes sense. In 2004, 2005, you were part of a Super Bowl run that had all the makings of a fairy tale ending, with the Steelers heading to Detroit. You know, being the sixth seed, no one believed that the team would actually be there. Walk me through your mental and emotional state of mind as you beat out the Indianapolis Colts to move on to Super Bowl 40.
The big thing that I think a lot of fans miss, people who have not, you know, taken the red pill and seen the other side of the matrix in professional sports, is, you know, baseball, hockey, football. There's different best teams at different points in the year. And what I mean by that is, whoever might have the best record overall from the season may not have been the team that was playing the best in the last month of the season. But when you look at that 2005 season, when we had to win every our last 5 regular season games, otherwise we weren't going to make the playoffs. So we went for a run of five consecutive wins going into that. I mean, there was no other team playing that well in the NFL at that point in the season.
Yeah.
So going into the playoffs, we knew that there was a chance that we were going to go all the way simply because we were playing so well at that point. You know, who could beat us? We were in a position where we were hitting on all cylinders, offensively, defensively, and special teams, and there's no reason why we can't make history. Being on the road and home field advantage, as people see now, is after we've done it, and I know Green Bay went and did it a couple years ago. Being, you know, your seeding in the playoffs is not as important as your effort, execution, and mind state. And we knew we were going to be the champs before we played Cincinnati. And no matter what happened in Indianapolis, it's just there was a belief that just was just there. We just knew somehow, some way, we were going to come out of there with a victory. By the time we got to Denver, you know, Denver was a great team, but there's just no stopping that train. We were on fire, and then, you know, in the Super Bowl, we just finished the job.
Definitely a lot of things at stake. I'm going to take you back a little bit. AFC Championship game against Indianapolis. You probably know where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts and feelings going through your mind when Jerome Bettis fumbled the ball at the one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see it as he fumbled. I think that Evan linebacker placed his helmet right on the ball, and he forced the fumble. Jerome had not fumbled all year. And one thing that a lot of times we forget as fans is the guys on the other team get paid too, and I think that's an example of a great play by the defensive player. Now, what did I think? To me, I was just hoping somebody caught. I can't even remember who was running it back, but I just knew he had to get. I knew once Ben tackled him, I knew we were going to be okay, because defense was not going to let them get in the end zone. And even if they hit a field goal, that would have only tied the game, and we would have won it in overtime. And that was my mentality. But it was like a movie. It was almost unreal that's the last thing you expected to happen was a fumble. Especially from somebody who hasn't fumbled all season.
Exactly. Now, when I had interviewed Jerome as well, he was kind of elated. He says, you know, wow, I knew that our defense was going to stop. I knew that, you know, there were going to be guys out there to make those plays. Of course, with Cowers last year, with his last tenure, and I've interviewed Tyrone Carter. I've interviewed lots of other Steelers, Max Starks being another one. You know, you described it as a movie. I definitely believe that it was a movie that was unfolding with the happiest of endings. Speaking of an ending, didn't quite an ending for you, but when you went into to Steelers camp the following year, you were basically granted a starting position, and then Sean Mahan started in that position. What was it like? I mean, did you feel you were being replaced? Was it something that you had to do a mental check on to say, okay, maybe this is trying to tell me something, maybe I need to go somewhere else? How did you approach it at that point, and did you believe that there was an opportunity for you somewhere else in the NFL?
I mean, there was no opportunity left in Pittsburgh once the coaching change was made. You know, it's not about anything I did or for that matter, anything that Steelers did. It's a situation where, you know, Coach Tomlin had his staff and people have their guys. And anytime there's a change in regime at any team or business for that matter, people are going to have their own people that they want to bring in. And that was a position that Coach Tomlin felt that he had somebody. You know, obviously I ended up going to Arizona and playing with Russ Grimm and Ken Wisenhunt, who I played for in Pittsburgh. And you know, I don't really, you know, that situation, it's just strictly business, and that's really what it is. And sometimes as a young man, at, you know, age 26, 27, or, you know, some of the ages that athletes go through these type of life changes in their professional lives, it can feel very personal. But I knew that it was just strictly business, me being a businessman myself. And, you know, ended up playing for two more teams, and other than that, I got to thank God that I was in the NFL as long as I was. I was in the NFL for 8 years, know, there's some guys that don't make it 8 days.
Yeah, you're right. Or if they do make it past the initial, sometimes they don't even get to the stage that you were on where you acquired a Super Bowl ring. Most players, just like LeVon Kirkland, who played so well in the 90s, walked away without a ring. And that's one of those regretful things that, you know, you can talk about the Dan Marinos and, you know, lots of other players, obviously a Pittsburgh native, Dan Marino. But when you walk away from the game, you played for so long and do not have the jewelry to support it, it's almost as if there's some type of void there. From a professional standpoint, but from a personal standpoint, you can say you left it out on the field, and LeVon Kirkland did. Dan Marino did. He holds records there in Miami that may never be broken. But you know, looking at your past, heads you into the future in a post-football career. You own the mansion at Maple Heights. That's a very interesting... you've done a lot of things. You've done some songwriting. You've dabbled in a little bit of that with Pittsburgh Slim and Margo B. Some production done by E. Dan. Obviously, with Black and Yellow being Wiz Khalifa's Pittsburgh call, you're part of that as well. And what I didn't know, you were a member of the Screen Actors Guild and have been since 2006. And you've started in commercials as well. You've been relatively successful with all these endeavors, but tell me why the mansion in Maple Heights is such a great place for people to go to.
It's a bed and breakfast experience, especially for people who are traveling from city to city for work, who used to stay in very sterile corporate hotels, where it's kind of the same thing everywhere you go. It's a nice break from, you know, staying just in a hotel room where you don't necessarily know anybody that works there. Where we're located, very close to the University of Pittsburgh and a lot of the hospitals around here, Carnegie Mellon University, Chatham University, it's ideal. It's an ideal location, and we just wanted to bring a different Pittsburgh experience to Pittsburgh that Pittsburgh hasn't had. You know, there's things that are synonymous with people visiting the Pittsburgh who have to try Pimani Brothers, or you have to go up to Mount Washington. And these are the types of things that, you know, people associate with visiting Pittsburgh. And so we wanted to add something to that. And instead of just staying at the Wyndham or the Omni or any of the other great hotels the city has, you change it up and stay at a bed and breakfast instead.
You know what? I can tell you, diversifying what you do and the people that you're trying to pull in to your establishment sometimes can be the most daunting of tasks, but you seem to be able to do it and actually do it well. A lot of people have said, as a matter of fact, I missed out. Somebody had mentioned the mansion in Maple Heights last year when I was there in Pittsburgh at Steelers training camp. And I actually wanted to go. I didn't know that you would own it at the time, so that was quite interesting. I would have liked to stop by. Looking at the 2015 NFL season, I'm going to ask for a prediction. I normally don't, but I'm going to ask you where you currently see this Steelers team headed, and do they make the postseason?
I think one thing about the National Football League that's better than a lot of other sports, but it's, you start to see more of it, especially in Major League Baseball, is the parity. There's a lot of parity in the NFL, so there's a lot of good teams, and there's no way to really predict who's going to win year after year. So, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, had a rocky start last year, ended up finishing very strong. Now, if they can just continue more of the same, or at least continue to move in that manner, there's no reason why the Steelers can't be in Super Bowl 50. I think that, especially when you have a guy like Ben, you know, I played with Ben for a number of years, who understands this league, understands the game, and is just a natural born leader. There's no telling how far this team could go. I think that the task ahead of them, playing in a division with, you know, two other really good NFL teams in Baltimore and Cincinnati, it's tough. And I think those games are going to be the biggest telltales, is how do we play against the teams in our own division. And although Cleveland's Cleveland, and, you know, they're really never good. You know, I'm not necessarily – I'm a Pittsburgh native, but I'm not trying to make fun of them. I'm just reporting the news. It's usually not good.
Yeah, you're right.
At the end of the day, there's no guarantee that they're not going to be, a step above where they've been. And I think that when you're playing against a team like Cleveland, who's so familiar with Pittsburgh, that may be the team that could make or break our destiny too, even if they're not in the playoffs.
Right.
So I think the biggest thing to look at is the division matchups. How do we play against the teams in our own division? Because we probably have the best overall division in football, mm-hmm. and so that's going to be where we figure out how far this team is going to go. I believe that they should be in the postseason. There's really no reason why. I think that you could have three teams out of the AFC North in the playoffs with the two wild cards coming out of this division. And so if there's three spots for AFC North teams, I know Pittsburgh's not going to be the one left out.
You know, last year they were all over 500, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Baltimore. So a lot to be desired. We're going to talk a little Pirates for a second. They seem to be on an up and down. Clint Hurdle changing the lineup a little bit here and there. Polanco batting first. And, you know, and then a shocking third base move with Aramis Ramirez, who started his career in Pittsburgh, now on first base. Had a fantastic game yesterday. The guy's got a great cannon. He's good at bat. Do you foresee the Pirates heading into postseason?
It sucks being in the same division as St. Louis, because that organization is, you know, arguably the most successful organization in the National League, you know, just historically, and it's very difficult to have to compete directly with them year after year. Pittsburgh right now is the second best record in all of baseball, but they're still in second place, and so the big thing again goes back to division games. And how are we playing against Chicago, and how are we playing against St. Louis? We took two out of three in St. Louis last week. We haven't played so well against Chicago this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Milwaukee and Cincinnati have given Pittsburgh some problems, too. Against every other team around the league, Pittsburgh's awesome. They have a winning record against everyone else, those division games. So if we can somehow put it together in this last month of the season and find a way to win this division, then I have no doubt that, you know, Pittsburgh will be the National League champs. The problem is, if you end up in that one-game playoff, all it takes is for one pitcher to have the game of his life, and you're done. And that's the thing I don't like about that game, but it is what it is.
Yep, exactly right. No, it definitely is what it is. Pirates seem to be doing exactly what they want to do at times with the right order. Once you start mixing and matching, you know, you put a starter in there who's slumping. I'm going to have to say, you know, Garrett Cole, who's been more rocky than anything. He had an ace game the other day. And then you have Locke, who's struggled at starts, is showing decline in his starting position. And to be honest with you, to put, you know, someone like Archimedes Caminero, or you have Bastardo in there, or, you know, once you start mixing it and matching, you're going to find the right combination heading into October. I definitely look forward to see the Pirates. Of course, they're going to be on the road. They have a really tough road schedule. Got to fly all the way out to Los Angeles. A lot of things to be considered for this Pirates team right now. But I foresee them also making a run to the playoffs. And of course, everybody calls it Bucktober. They haven't been here other than the last three or four, you know, seasons. Until then, it was a drought, a very long drought. So Pirates should definitely be headed into the postseason, hopefully with that non-one-game wild card, you know, situation. But again, a tough trip, but I foresee them coming out on top as long as Hurdle can keep them all on the same page. Chucky, it's been great. Love talking Steelers, Pirates with you. I appreciate all your time. I know you had a business to run. I will let you go and let you do what you do best. I thank you very much for your time today.
No problem, man.
Thanks a lot, Chucky. Hey, and if I'm ever in Pittsburgh, I'll be sure to stay at your hotel. How's that?
All right, that works for me.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much. And with that being said, this has been Rudy Rude Dog Reyes with Chucky Okobe on the RudeDogShow.com.